Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, February 14th, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeola Jr., and joining me is Tim Motherfucking Geddes.
I'm rolling around at the speed of sound, dude. Bless. I got places to go. I got to follow my rainbow, baby.
Sonic Happy Heroes.
Sonic Day.
Happy Sonic Day.
Sonic Adventure 2, dude. Escape from the City.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, I'm just
Sonic Heroes is just Sonic Heroes.
That's my favorite one. Probably a controversial opinion as far as like the themes. Right, wow. Sonic Heroes theme.
Live and learn, baby.
Live and learn is also great.
You retweeted that video of you like skateboarding down on a skateboard with no it's a snowboard. Okay.
I was recreating the opening moments of Sonic Adventure 2. Yeah.
And I watched it in full of just you sliding down. And I was like, I don't know if I've met someone lamer, but I love as much as I do.
We're gonna watch more in the Sonic screencast coming up later. So get prepared, Barrett.
Tim, how are you celebrating Sonic Day?
Well, I saw the movie last night. We're going to do a review at Screencast after this with Gary Whitta. Very excited about that. And then, you know what? No joke, this weekend, I'm debating, do I replay Sonic Mania?
Dude.
Or, and this one's getting a little crazier, a little craftier, because I've replayed Mania in the last year.
Okay.
Do I play Sonic Generations?
Yes, you do play Sonic Generations.
I think I'm going
to
do it,
guys. I've been wanting to replay Sonic Generations for the longest time.
Hell
and it's
yeah.
Sitting, it's I can get it on Xbox because it's backwards compatible.
Fuck yeah.
But it's one of those things where it's like, do I want to drop the $20 or whatever it is to buy that game? I think I do.
Yeah,
that would have been a great stream. We were like planning a stream earlier this week for
we
today.
Up. Yeah.
And we got Bleeding Edge is like going to be a great stream that we'll do at 2:30 today.
Yeah.
But Sonic could have also
not
been
fast
a great
enough,
one.
Though.
Yeah, not fast enough. Not fast enough. You know, we floated the idea of doing What's Blessed Drinking?
Mm-hmm.
You know, ever since I started drinking tea on this show. And so I wanted to bring this one up because this is the first time I'm drinking this flavor of tea, all right? It's called Berry Blossom White.
Okay.
Berry Blossom White. And it's described as a delicate white tea with tinges of huckleberry and white cranberry.
How many cubes of sugar did you put in
two.
That bad boy?
Huh? Two cubes of sugar because I smelled the tea bag and I was like, this smells sweet.
Mm. You can smell
already.
The huckleberry.
Yeah, you can smell the huckleberry. And I was like, you know what, man? I don't need to go too much further with this.
What am I drinking today? Not one, not two, but three. Tangerine
I was waiting
LaCroix.
For like a third arm. To
yeah,
right.
I wish. Because I drank a little too much last night celebrating that blue blur. You know what I mean?
Dude, I feel you, man. Speaking of celebrating things, all right, today's stories include a golden goose of a Game of the Year winner, PlayStation 5, more like PlayStation $500, and more because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong. We're going to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames or listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindafunnygames where bronze members or above get to write in and silver members or above get the show ad free. I was going to like bang harder on the table, but there's so many liquids.
You got to be careful.
And I was like, I don't know how much this table can take.
Yeah, me, liquid, and laptops don't go well.
Exactly.
You got big bless energy today, and I
like
do.
That. Thank you. I appreciate it. I mean, it's Sonic Day. You know, you got to go hard or go home. Go fast or go
Share this day with your loved ones.
Exactly. Now it's time for some housekeeping. Screenfest is happening right after today's episode of KFGD. Like Tim said, it's going to be me, Tim, Kevin, Gary Whitta. It's going to be a blast.
I'm just saying, it should have been Sonic Cast.
Sonic 3D
Sonic
blast.
Cast?
Yeah. Because Screenfest, it's like, it sounds like you guys are fasting from screens. I don't know. I just don't like the SEO of Screenfest.
But we should, I mean, think about it.
Mm.
I feel like the smartphones are crap. What's the BoJack Horseman quote?
I feel like the smartphones
are disconnecting us.
Okay.
It's like the second actually, I don't spoil it.
I know what I'm talking about.
You watch BoJack Horseman.
Things adults say. You know?
Yeah, things adults say. Yeah.
Here's the thing, Bless.
What up?
Here's the thing, okay?
Yeah.
Barrett's still living in a slow world.
Mm.
He didn't go fast yet. He hasn't seen the movie. He doesn't understand.
He's not seen the movie. That's a good point. That's a very good point. Today, around 2:30, we'll be streaming the closed beta of Bleeding Edge, so stay tuned for that. That's going to be a good time. It's going to be me. It's going to be Andy Cortez. It's going to be some Nitro Rifle action.
Whoa.
And then Love, Sex, and Stuff returns tonight at 8 p.m. Tim Geddes, Nick Scarpino.
In honor of Sonic Day, we're going to give some great love and sex advice and other stuff. That's where the stuff comes in. You guys can actually call in live. There will be a phone number that appears. And you can call. Me and Nick will answer your questions live on stage. This is the stage.
Thank you to our Patreon producers, James Davis, David Mintel, Muhammad Muhammad, The Nanobiologist, Frank Furter, Shiraz Razak, Patrick Higgins, Travis Gajkowski, Drew Gardner, Dominic Shorter, Ginny Burnt, Joseph Soler, and Katie Gallagher. Man, all y'all are great. Thank you so much. And then today we're brought to you by Upstart, Mint Mobile, and Spotify's The Besties. But I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have four stories today.
A baker's dozen.
And I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but these are four meaty stories. Starting with number one, what the honk is happening? We have our DICE Award winners. I'm pulling this right up from and the results from The Hollywood Reporter. The 23rd annual DICE Awards, presented by the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences, were handed out at the Aria Resort and Casino in Las Vegas on Thursday night, which is also hosted by Greg Miller.
Did you get to watch it at all?
No, I didn't.
I was watching Sonic, so I didn't get to see it yet. I can't wait to go back. Greg Miller and Jessica Chobot at the DICE Awards every year. Always fantastic.
I saw a couple clips of some zingers that they had. And let me tell
you, Mike Drucker, man.
Well, Mike Drucker was getting it in.
I don't know if he had anything to do with this year's. I imagine he did. I just don't know for sure that he did. But every year that he works on it, Greg's in there making his bitterty bops and his boobity boos and goddamn funny.
Oh, man. There was one zinger that they had on Blizzard with Warcraft 3. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I felt it in my soul. Australian developer House House took home the night's top prize game of the year with Untitled Goose Game. Hideo Kojima's Death Stranding and Remedy Entertainment's Control topped the field of nominees with 8 nominations each, but the former only took home 2 awards for technical achievement and audio design, while the latter was honored 4 times with Game Direction, Action Game of the Year, Music Composition, and Art Direction. Untitled Goose Game took home 3 awards in total, in addition to the Game of the Year. The indie also scored wins in Independent Game and Character for the titular Foul. A total of 65 titles released in 2019 received nominations for this year's DICE Awards. Winners are chosen by a panel of industry leaders. The event also featured the induction of longtime Sony exec Connie Booth into the AIAS Hall of Fame. And then we have the list of winners here, which we can run through. Okay. We can Sonic speed through.
Give me some of them highlights.
All right. So I'm going to start with Game of the Year. And so, Untitled Goose Game
was
the winner. The nominees were Control, Death Stranding, Disco Elysium, Outer Wilds, and Untitled Goose Game.
Thus, further proving how wacky a year last year was, where every single outlet giving Game of the Year to a different game. It's like, it's a beautiful thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's what a time to be alive as a gamer. Looking back at the Game of the Year awards that DICE have given out in the past, we have God of War last year.
Yep.
Breath of the Wild before that.
Yep.
Overwatch before that.
Yep.
So all that kind of like.
That makes sense.
That, you know,
I'll predict all of those.
Fallout 4. In
really?
2015.
That's wild.
Yeah. Over The Witcher.
Over The Witcher, over Metal Gear Solid 5, over Undertale.
Yeah. And then before that, Dragon Age Inquisition, Last of Us, Journey, Skyrim, Mass Effect 2, Uncharted 2. It starts, making a lot of sense.
Frankfurter.
Fallout 4 is really the only, and Untitled Goose Game.
Yeah.
And it's stand up.
Frankfurter writes in and says, "Good morning, Blessing and Tim. Let's get down to brass tacks. Untitled Goose Game, would you have guessed that? It'd win Game of the Year, because I sure as shit didn't. Don't get me wrong, I love the game, but I never thought in a million years it'd win Game of the Year. This is the first indie game to win the title from either the Game Awards or DICE since 2012, Journey and Telltale's The Walking Dead, respectively. So, what does this win mean for the future of indie games? Do you think that we will see more off-the-wall crazy ideas in the future, or is this game just lightning in a bottle? Thanks for all you do, Frank Furter."
I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. I think it is lightning in the bottle in the sense that you can't kind of make that type of stuff happen, like the memeability, the virility of the goose itself. Having said that, I do think that the industry has been leaning towards being a lot more open to new ideas over the last decade. And so we're going to see a lot more off-the-wall, different type games. I think it's just going to be harder and harder to stand out and to be something that is radically new and different.
Right? Yeah, and that's kind of my take, is that I don't think this necessarily means anything for indie games specifically. I feel like tastes as a whole are starting to shift more toward not necessarily looking at the big action, third-person action-adventure game as, the default winner, right? Because I feel like that's kind of the thing, right? When we look at 2019, I feel like the big assumption was that, Resident Evil 2 is probably going to win Game of the Year everywhere because that game is quality, that game is a third-person action game that translates to a wide audience, right? You look at God of War, and it's kind of that, right? A third-person action-adventure game with a grand story, great production, big budget, all that stuff, right? Look at Breath of the Wild, same thing. Overwatch, kind of different, but still like within the realm of like big budget, something that translates, something that people can understand, right? It was, I think that kind of fed into like a lot of the discussion for 2017 Game of the Year, where like I know there was a debate on this show a lot about PUBG, right? And whether or not PUBG could qualify, because PUBG is like a weird, like, one, it's early access. Two, it's a battle royale game that has like technical issues and like, you know, it's not that full package that you'd expect. But I feel like over the years, tastes have started to shift and evolve in ways that we're more accepting toward different types of ideas for games and different, like, Untitled Goose Game specifically is one that I would not have guessed. Yeah. Like, I would have expected, like, an indie nominee or indie winner for this category to be, like, Disco Elysium or Outer Wilds or something along that realm. Still, like, even though Untitled Goose Game wouldn't be my pick, and I'm still surprised that it won Game of the Year, like, I think that's still cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions I have. Like, I don't know the actual voting process for DICE and how like this actually comes to be, like how it is decided. And I wonder, was there a split vote situation? Was there like a runaway success with the goose?
That was definitely like my first assumption, is that like Control, Death Stranding, Disco Elysium, Outer Wilds split the vote so much that Untitled Goose Game just shot to the top.
Yeah, and this goes back to last year being a weird year. You saying that you thought that Resident Evil 2 was a shoo-in. I definitely didn't, because it was a remake, and I think that immediately hits it down. I feel like last year didn't have that standout AAA.
That one pick.
Like, that one pick in terms of, not even just the obvious what's the game of the year, but just in terms of the obvious of like, that's the mainstream game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's the, I mean, God of War is such a weird one, but the Overwatch, that's the Overwatch of this year, right? It just didn't have that, but it's cool that it had so many different things. And when all of these award shows we've seen over the last couple months, it's every single list of nominations is always slightly different. Like, it's always there's like 10 games to choose from, and every award show has like the six, but it's a different six. You know what I mean? Like, it's pretty cool. And then also seeing the winners of it all. I agree with you. The Goose is definitely the one that I didn't think was actually going to win any Game of the Year awards. But
yeah, especially like DICE, right? Which is like a major one. Like, I mean, congratulations. But to continue, right? Action Game of the Year, the nominees were Call of Duty Modern Warfare, Control, Devil May Cry 5, Gears 5, Sekiro, and then Control won that one. Adventure Game of the Year. And I have issue with this category, but the nominees for Adventure Game of the Year are Death Stranding, Luigi's Mansion 3, Resident Evil 2, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, and The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, and Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order 1. Adventure game, that's a weird category, because I feel like when you think of adventure game, you think of point-and-click adventure. Or like something like Telltale's Walking Dead.
I feel like they're going action-adventure here.
Yeah.
Unless there's also an action-adventure category. Cat genre, man, let's just kill it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Hey, fuck it.
But I feel like we...
Let the past die. Kill it.
Let the past die. Kill it if you have to. But I feel like there is an understanding of like, oh yeah, action-adventure. But adventure is such a... When you say just adventure...
Yeah, right? I'm thinking like Grim Fandango.
You think
I'm thinking like
Grim Fandango, or even like when you think of modern adventure games, right? Mm. I think of like Gone Home or like Walking Simulator, stuff that's more story-based.
Telltale games.
And like Telltale games, you know, Detroit Become Human, like stuff like that, where it is like you are doing choose-your-own-adventurous type stuff or like narrative-based games. That's kind of what I think of when I think of specifically adventure. So it's interesting how they kind of go their own path with it, but... These are the DICE Awards.
Look,
so.
Here's the deal, man. Call it whatever the fuck you want to call it.
Yeah.
This is, hey, it's not Game of the Year, but we want to give it a shout-out. That's what the category actually is, right? It's just, let's put all the fucking games here that it's just like, you know, these are great games.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the Game of the Great Year Award.
I feel like there for video game categorization, I feel like we could get it down to a science, is my thing, right? And I don't know if the answer is, like, Let's do more so like horror game of the year, or and then like comedy game of the year, and go that route and look at it more like genre almost analogous to movie genres, or if it is like this is the path of like fighting game, racing game, family game. You know, family game is also a weird one. I feel like there is a way we can get it down to a science. I don't know how.
You're not a scientist.
I'm not a scientist.
Yeah.
I'm just a humble video games media person. Family game of the year. The winner is Super Mario Maker 2. I'm just going to say winners from now on because there's a lot of categories. Yeah. Final Game of the Year, Mortal Kombat 11. Racing Game of the Year, Mario Kart Tour, which I think is an interesting one.
Wait.
What?
Racing Game of the Year, Mario Kart Tour.
The other nominees, Crash Team Racing Nitro Fuel, Dirt Rally 2.0, F1 2019, and Trials Rising.
This feels like the Game of the Year equivalent of Goose Game winning over
Mario Kart
nominees.
Tour would not be my pick.
Yeah.
Very Mario interesting. Mario Kart Tour unequivocally sucks.
Yeah.
What the fuck? I played hours of that thing. Yeah. Like, I probably put 10 hours into that game.
Really?
Yeah.
I put it in 20 minutes, and I was like, nope.
I was like, sucks. I'm pushing through, man.
Why? Why would you do that to yourself?
I don't know.
I love you too much for you to do that to yourself.
Role-playing game of the year, the winner is Outer Worlds.
Good for them.
Which I feel like is also another interesting one, because Disco Elysium was also nominated along with Final Fantasy XIV, Shadowbringers, Kingdom Hearts 3, and Pokemon Sword and Pokemon Shield.
Mm.
I liked Outer Worlds. Outer Worlds would not have been my pick out of those games.
What would be your pick?
I've not played Disco Elysium, but from the ways I've heard people talk about Disco Elysium and what I know about Disco Elysium, I would expect that and Shadowbringers, honestly, to be over Outer Worlds. Out of the ones here I played, then like Outer Worlds would be my default pick, because I'll pick it over Pokemon.
Oh yeah,
but that's kind of how I'm seeing it. Sports game of the year, it's FIFA 20. Strategy
should have been MLB the Show. The same.
Should it have been though?
Yes. Should it? FIFA's the fucking same every year.
So is MLB.
No, it's not.
They changed the last rules.
They changed the baseball players?
They changed the rules to baseball, dude.
Yeah, dude.
Oh, did they?
No, they added a bunch of cool new modes and shit.
They're not using bats anymore.
It was the first time an MLB The Show game was engaging since, like, 2014.
Wait, say that again?
It's the first time an MLB The Show game was engaging since 2014.
Okay.
So, all right. I'm just saying.
I'll buy it.
They deserved it.
I'll buy it. Strategy / simulation game of the year. Fire Emblem, Three Houses. Immersive reality technical achievement, Blood and Truth. Congratulations. I really like that game. Immersive reality game of the year, Pistol Whip, which is one I want to play. I don't think it's on PSVR though, and so come to PSVR and I'll play you. Outstanding achievement for an independent game, Untitled Goose Game, and that's over A Short Hike, Disco Elysium, Sayonara Wild Hearts, and With the Golf. Portable game of the year, Sayonara Wild Hearts, and that's over Grindstone, Call of Duty Mobile, Sky, Children of Light, and With the Golf. Online game of the year, Apex Legends. Legit. Nice. You love to see it. Outstanding achievement in game design, Baba Is You. Outstanding achievement in game direction, Control. Outstanding achievement in animation, Luigi's Mansion 3. Outstanding achievement in art direction, Control. Outstanding achievement in character, Untitled Goose Game.
What the fuck?
Over Grease.
Also, no, that's bullshit. If anybody was to be nominated for character from the Star Wars game. Here. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Why Grease? He's a funny character.
Greasy money, baby.
But, like, he doesn't have, like, this overarching, like, major character development where you're like, fuck, he's like, what?
Yeah.
Bless makes a good point, though. Greasy money, baby.
Yeah, greasy money,
God,
baby.
God, I hate you both.
Outstanding achievement in original music composition, Control. And then, actually, there's only a few left, so I'll finish this. Outstanding achievement in audio design, Death Stranding. Outstanding achievement in story, Disco Elysium. And then, lastly, outstanding technical achievement, Death Stranding.
There we go.
Congratulations, all those DICE award winners.
Said it before, I'll say it again. Video games are cool.
Video games are cool, man. Number two, Sony is struggling with PlayStation 5 price due to costly parts. This is from Takashi Mochizuki of Bloomberg. Now, this is a meaty story.
Mm-hmm.
And so, strap in.
Beefy.
Scarce components have pushed the manufacturing costs for Sony Corp's next PlayStation to around $450 per unit, forcing a difficult price-setting decision in its battle with Microsoft Corp, according to people with knowledge of the matter. The Japanese conglomerate is preparing to gradually replace the six-year-old PS4 console, releasing its PlayStation 5 the same holiday season its arch-rival debuts, the upcoming Xbox Series X. Sony typically finalizes a console's price in February of the release year, followed by a mass production in the spring. With the PS5, the company is taking a wait-and-see approach, said the people asking not to be named because the details are private. The PS4, released in 2013 at a retail price of $399, was estimated by IHS Market to cost $381 to manufacture, and that's important. With the $450 unit cost and a similar gross margin, the PS5's retail price would have to be at least $470. That would be a hard sell to consumers, considering Sony's most expensive machine now is the $399 PS4 Pro, and is often discounted, according to, Macquarie Capital analyst Damian Thong. Quote, consumers will benchmark their expectations based on the PS4 Pro and PS4, Thong said. Quote, if Sony prices above that, it would likely be to balance a need to offset higher material costs against risk to demand, end quote. Sony declined to comment. The company's biggest headache is ensuring a reliable supply of DRAM and NAND flash memory. with both in high demand as smartphone makers gear up for fifth generation devices. According to people familiar with Sony's operations, Samsung Electronics Co. just announced its Galaxy S20 product range, each variant of which will have 5G and a minimum of 12 gigabytes of RAM in the US. Video game companies often sell hardware at thin margins or even at a loss because they profit from lucrative game software and recurring online subscription services. Sony's chief executive officer, Kenichiro Yoshida, has said the business should be judged by the number of active users, not the number of hardware units sold. Some Sony game staff think it should sell the new console at a loss if necessary to match Microsoft's price, while other Sony executives would prefer to make money as the company did with the PS4. Quote, "We must keep PlayStation 5's bill of materials under our control, and we need to make the correct number of units in the initial production," end quote, Sony's chief financial officer, Hiroki Totoki, said at an earnings briefing earlier this month. Most of the components for the console have been locked down, the people said, including the cooling system, which is unusually expensive at a few dollars per unit. Typically, companies would spend less than $1, but Sony opted to lavish more on making sure heat dissipation from the powerful chips housed inside the console isn't an issue. The ongoing coronavirus outbreak has had no impact so far on preparations for PS5 production, they said. The company has yet to decide how many PS5 units it will make in the first year, they added. Separately, Sony plans to release a new version of the PSVR virtual reality headset tentatively scheduled after the PS5 goes on sale, the people said. Sony has already canceled some previously planned features for a new mirrorless camera due this year owing to the constrained DRAM supply. Several people with knowledge of the matter said.
So they're changing their plans in other parts of their business to focus on the PlayStation side.
Yeah. Sony executives are voicing patience about the next console's pricing as they anticipate the transition to be a gradual one, said people familiar with its day-to-day operations. Many of the games launched for PS5 will also be available to play on the predecessor machine, so revenue from software and related network services is expected to keep the business performance intact. Microsoft and Sony are both expanding their respective online subscription services.
Can you read that again?
Yeah. So
the predecessor bit?
Yeah, many of the games launched for PS5 will also be available to play on the predecessor machine, so revenue from software and related network services is expected to keep the business performance intact. So that sounds exactly like that is exactly what you think.
Just that there's going to be two versions of the games? That to me sounds more like what we saw
last gen,
where it's like there's an Assassin's Creed.
There's a PS5 version and a PS4 version.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, okay, that's
not like what Xbox is doing, where there's one version.
Well, I feel like Xbox is doing the same thing also, right? Because for Xbox Series X, I imagine, and this is weird future stuff because we don't really know what it's like yet because messaging is so weird, but I imagine that for Xbox Series X, there will be, say, Halo Infinite. There's going to be a Halo Infinite Xbox Series X version and an Xbox One version.
We'll see.
We'll see. That's how I've interpreted it.
Yeah, we've talked about this a lot on this show.
Yeah, but
yeah. I thought like Microsoft was clear about like there would be separate versions. Will it be the same like?
We'll see. Though? My money is on it being one version.
It's so weird. Going into this generation feels so weird.
We'll know soon.
It's all going to be clear once they just start talking. It's like once all we need is Xbox to be like, it's just Xbox. There's the different series, but it's Xbox. Then it's like, why would they have different SKUs of the game? Yeah. Just have the game.
By June, we'll understand. Like June, once we start seeing box art and we see it either say Xbox Series X or Xbox Series or Xbox Family, whatever it is, then we'll get a good idea of like what is this. But from what I understand, right, PS5, from this paragraph alone, PS5 games, some of them, probably more of them than we'd expect, are going to be also available on the PS4.
See, to me, this is really talking about games like Cyberpunk and Avengers.
Really?
Right? Specifically, Avengers. Mm-hmm. Like, this is it's hoping that these type of, like, Destiny-like experiences are going to be the thing that, like, keeps them going. They want to have that smooth transition from this gen to next gen with the PlayStation Online services.
Some of those, I mean, Cyberpunk, I have that assumption already that there's going to be a PS5 version. Whether or not it's going to be remastered or Game of the Year edition or whatever it may be, right? Like,
they're getting that money.
Yeah,
one way or another, they're getting that money.
But they're talking about here, right, Sony's income, which they do make money off of, like, you know, third-party games, right? They get a cut.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is it's the income of their online services. It's like, okay, the keeping people playing in that ecosystem and, like, to continue on. Like, that's what they want, is they want those subscription numbers.
Many of the games launched for the PS5 will be available also on the predecessor machines, so revenue from software and related network services is expected. Okay.
Yeah, it's another thing. We don't know till we know. Like, until PlayStation starts talking about what the PS5 actually is, when it's coming, what games are coming, like what that all looks like. It's like we just don't know PS5 games. So it's like, mm-hmm. right now we can only think about what we know of Last of Us 2 and Ghost of Tsushima and things like that, and like the third party titles. But then eventually, it's like Horizon 2 is not coming out on PlayStation 4.
Well, or is it? Well, that's the thing. That's what I'm getting from this paragraph, is that it might, right? If it's a launch game. But why would they do that? We'll see, man. Marcus,
so going back to the money, the cost of this, right? Like, so $500, I don't think is outrageous for the PlayStation 5 to launch at. I think that's not ideal.
Yeah, that's not what they want, though.
Of course.
But it's not outrageous for sure.
But knowing Sony, like, and looking at them in the past, like, I don't think that they're going to take that big of a hit when it comes to, like, taking a loss on hardware sales. That's just not the business they do. They're going to want to maintain that the number one placement that they have, but that's going to be a tall order when if the thing is going to be a struggle to hit 500, they're not going to drop to 400. Like, what, 450? Like, anything can help, but
I feel like 450 might be their option, since, like, you know, if the costs are coming out to $450, like, unit price, and they don't want to lose money, right? And they prefer to gain, like, they prefer to make money. I feel like going from 450 to 500, like, 500 is going to be something they don't want to do. And I could see them wanting 450 over 500. And I feel like they would do 450, you know, with them wanting to still, you know, make money off of software and online services and stuff. Yeah. Like, I feel like that's a viable option more so than losing $50 on each console. I feel like that's a big ask for them.
Yeah, man. God, it's such an interesting, like, warscape to look at, where it's like, man, is Xbox going to come in with this, like, super cheap machine that really can do all the things that the other one can, just lesser? Mm-hmm. And that's fine because the games are there. But if the games are everywhere, then there's nothing special about the Xbox. So what's that going to do for PlayStation? Like, we've never seen something this
weird.
Like, this weird, yeah, and this fucking, like, interesting, where it's like both sides have such compelling arguments.
To continue, Microsoft and Sony are both expanding their respective online subscription services, revenue from which may allow them greater flexibility on hardware pricing. People within PlayStation Business Unit said a key factor in deciding the ultimate PlayStation 5 retail price will be where Microsoft sets its price for next generation Xbox Series X. Microsoft is widely expected to hold that information back until the E3 Gaming Expo in Los Angeles in June. There is pressure from CFO Totoki for Sony to provide more transparency and information in the build-up to PS5's release, which has caused some consternation internally. Asked about when he expects Sony to provide guidance on gaming business outlook for the new fiscal year, Totoki said the plan is no different from the recent past, meaning the guidance can be expected around the end of April. If the company takes longer than usual, analysts may look to its next investor relations meetings to glean hints about the new console's retail price. The company held that meeting in late May last year. So a lot to chew on.
It is.
Here.
I don't know. I don't know when Sony's going to make their announcements. Like, at this point, it's not February.
No, it's not February.
You were right.
Yes.
Yeah. You were right.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I owe you some pizza.
Yeah. Well, I mean, depends, because March is the gray period. It could happen in March.
You're right.
I don't think it's going to happen in March.
I don't think so either. I think May is probably the right time. Mm-hmm. But with all this talk of the price, Xbox being probably at E3 where they're going to do their show, although they could not. Microsoft could have a March event, you know, or a May event, or anytime.
Yeah.
Right? What if Xbox is here and this is just like, you know what? We're going to hold off as long as possible. August.
But at this point, and this is a question we keep bringing up now, right? With what we know way more about the consoles than we did last time around, mm-hmm. right? Like, last time around, it was the year of the console releases. It was February and, I believe, May, right, for the PS4 and Xbox One, their conferences or whatever, like their reveals of the consoles, right? At this point, we know quite a bit about the consoles. Xbox, for sure, I believe we know Xbox is going to be at E3.
Oh, yeah. I mean, technically, they're going to be outside of E3.
Yeah, but they're going to quote, activate.
They're doing something.
They're activating that week, right?
Yeah. We don't know they're doing a press conference, though. And that's a...
That's true.
I assume they are, but I'm saying we don't know that they
are. That's a good point. We don't have that confirmation
yet. And from being at E3 the last couple of years and seeing what Microsoft's done is they just get the big theater, the Microsoft theater.
Yeah.
And kind of like that's where they do their conference, but then that's also where they have all their demos. Mm-hmm. So you can just go do the demos. They don't need to do the conference bit. They can just turn it into a giant demo space for all their games and have people come and play them.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case. I think that they are going to have a conference. Like Microsoft right now, they're kind of teed up for it, right? They're teed up for being the biggest conference of E3. They're the only ones.
Yeah.
Why would they not take that and run with it, right?
That's my thing. So like, would they... Like, is it an option for them to go before E3 and then again at E3 with all of what we know so far? Like, how much more information can they provide for us that would take up two activations?
I think they could. I don't think that would be a smart call. Now, bless.
Yes.
There are some interesting things to think about with all of this. Two words. Jeff Keighley.
Oh, man. All right? I love those two words.
This guy backing out of E3, right? Mm-hmm. I wasn't on the shows when we talked about all this. There is ramifications to this in many different ways. It's not just, oh, he's not going to be at E3 and like, oh, that's going to change the amount of access to developers and interviews and things like that unless someone comes into a place. And it's not just a host, that's production. There's so much that Jeff does that isn't just like, hey, I'm here talking to this person. It's like he plans so much of the actual content itself and the programming. What else does he plan? Game Awards.
Oh, okay. I was going to say Opening Night Live.
Opening Night Live in Gamescom. There's this industry need or want and desire right now to fucking kill E3. And it's just like forever people have been moving towards Gamescom. At least the scuttlebutt around the industry is leaning towards Gamescom. It being bigger. It being more like worldwide and all this stuff. I wonder, is that too late? I think it is.
Yeah. No, yeah.
But like... When we're talking
about... There will be something happening.
But like, when we're talking about the, like, can they go twice? That's their going twice.
That's their second time.
Right?
Hmm. Also, speaking of E3 Coliseum, the last, like, couple episodes, we've been keeping an eye on their website because with Jeff Keighley announcing that he's dipping out, right? The E3 website has had it, like, the E3 Coliseum page updated as wait until Thursday, right? Thursday we're going to announce something or, like... Get ready to register on Friday or whatever, right? I went to check on it because I was like, oh, yeah, I've not heard anything about E3 Coliseum. Are they still doing it? Now if you go to the E3 Coliseum page, it's a 404. It says game over 404. The page you're looking for does not exist or has been moved.
Wow.
And so E3 Coliseum, probably not happening this year. Rest in peace.
2020 Gamescom is August 25th through August 29th. Definitely too late for like that pre-order push.
Of course,
that.
Yeah.
But that is a good time for some like final punches of getting that upper hand going into the next gen of what side are you taking? For the people that can only get one of these consoles, of which many people can only get one, what is going to sway them this way or that way?
Yeah.
Right? And I think that Gamescom is going to be real damn interesting.
It is. Nail Biologist writes in, says, Happy Valentine's Day, Blessing and Tim. Valentine's Day? Never heard of it.
Mm-mm. Blue blur, baby.
PS5 will reportedly cost $450 per unit to manufacture. Is this a worrying sign for release day prices? In comparison, the PS4 was estimated to cost $381 per unit to make and was sold at $399 for a slim profit. Does this give Microsoft a major advantage? Xbox, backed by the major safety net of Microsoft, to me at least, has the opportunity to undercut the PS5 price based on this estimate to gain market share. Even if it means losses for console sales, will Sony take the risk to sell the units at $450 or even lower to keep people playing their consoles? Thanks, the Nanobiologist.
Dude, it's anyone's guess right now. Like, I can see them just being confident, just being like, no, it's $450. I can even see them being like, fuck it, it's $500, and it's worth it. And here's why. Game.
Yeah.
It's the best place to play these games, and the only place you can play these games. And that's something that Xbox doesn't have. It has a handful of things, but it's like, we need to start seeing those things happen more and more. The exclusive battle, like we've talked about so often, right? Sony has that in spades. every time we're on the show and we're talking, I keep saying that I'm predicting that Sony's going to be real top-heavy this generation, where earlier we're going to see banger, 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 banger to get that install base. Yeah. This generation flip is unlike any we've ever seen. There is a way smoother transition for everything that we've heard from going from this gen to next gen. And for a lot of it, it's like, it might be a while before people need the next consoles. It's more of a, do you want the next consoles?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it won't be until next year that we're really starting to see that kind of play out of the hardware sales really kind of moving ahead on the Xbox side or PlayStation side, based on the proof being in the pudding of, is Xbox's ecosystem plan going to work out for them? Is PlayStation's exclusive plan going to work out for them?
Yeah. I'm starting to see a future, or a console release this fall, where it is like PS5 comes out at $500 and Xbox comes out, like whatever their equal SKU is, comes out at $400.
The Series X?
Yeah, I guess the Series X, right, comes out at $400. And if that's the case, I feel like Sony's going to try and sell you hard. Like, Sony's, like, we are going to see earlier trailers for, like, God of War.
That's
and
what
Horizon,
I'm saying, man. That's what I'm saying. It's and, like, yeah, they can come out at a higher price point if they are like, yo, motherfuckers, we're giving you the sequels. God of War, Spider-Man, Horizon, all of them. They're fucking happening. Yeah. They're happening earlier than you think. Not right now, but here's the lineup. Here's what we're gonna leave the breadcrumbs for you. Like,
yeah,
this is why you need it now. You know?
We'll see.
Yeah.
Number three. Half-Life Alyx has a release date.
Wow.
I'm pulling this from Andrew Webster of The Verge. The long-awaited next Half-Life is coming very soon. Half-Life Alyx, a VR spinoff that was revealed last year, will launch on March 23rd. Valve previously said that the game would be available sometime in March. Announced back in November, Alyx is the first new Half-Life game in 13 years, and it's exclusive to virtual reality platforms. Valve says that it will be a full-length title, designed to be played for hours at a time. Quote, today, we generally see playtesters go for 2 to 3 hours before taking a bathroom break, end quote. Programmer Robin Walker told The Verge. And if it's a success, Valve says that there could be more Half-Life titles coming in the future as well.
Dude, this is real. We got a date. They're going to hit it. I'm really confident. Earlier in the year when we did our predictions for the year, I predicted that they're going to hit the date, and it's not going to get delayed, and here we are. That looks like the reality. Wow.
Yeah.
Bonkers.
Dude, 3 days after Doom and Animal Crossing.
A week before Final Fantasy VII Remake, or Resident Evil 3, and then Final Fantasy VII Remake a week after that.
Yeah.
Wow.
What a great time.
It's about to be nuts, man. Like, you know, with all the delays that have happened, like the front half of the year has gotten a little bit barren, but not the front half, more like the front quarter, right?
The first few months.
Yeah, because we're about to, it's about to be real nice.
It is.
We're going to be
real
poppin'. Well.
We're going to be eating.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, January NPD is in and spending is down. I'm pulling this from Jeff Grubb of VentureBeat. Gaming fans in the United States are over the current generation of consoles, and that has led to another month of significant declines in spending. Even the younger and more vigorous Nintendo Switch was down in terms of hardware spending. January was also light on major releases outside of the month's top-selling Dragon Ball Z Kakarot. Quote, January 2020 tracked spending across video game, hardware, software, accessories, and game cards totaled $678 million. And NPD analyst Matt Piscatella said, that's down 26% when compared to a year ago. Late cycle hardware dynamics for PS4 and Xbox One, as well as a lighter new release software slate, drove the variance, end quote. The issue is that most people who want a PS4 or Xbox One already have one. And while Dragon Ball Z Kakarot performed well, it faced a tough comparison. January 2019 had Kingdom Hearts 3, Resident Evil 2, new Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe, and ongoing sales of Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Let's get to the software chart. As a note, NPD tracks physical sales at retailers, but it also gets digital data directly from publishers, but not every company participates. For example, Nintendo doesn't share its first-party digital sales, and Activision Blizzard does not provide its Battle.net sales. And so, here are the January 2020 NPD for the top 20 best-selling games of the month in the U.S. And these are sorted by dollar sales, not number of units sold. I'm going to start at 20, right? At 20, we have Pokemon Shield, Mortal Kombat 11, Just Dance 2020, FIFA 20, Need for Speed Heat, The Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild, Star Wars Battlefront 2, Luigi's Mansion 3, Pokemon Sword, Minecraft, and at number 10, Red Dead Redemption 2, Ring Fit Adventure, Mario Kart 8, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, NBA 2K20, and number 5, we have Grand Theft Auto 5, number 4, we have Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, number 3, Madden NFL 20, and number 2, we have Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2019, and at number 1, we have Dragon Ball Z Kakarot.
Get there it. There we go. Number 1, baby.
Number 1.
Okay, so you kind of broke my brain for a second, because I was like, Pokemon Shield outsold Pokemon Sword?
Oh, yeah, and all backwards, yeah.
But it was backwards. I'm like, that makes a lot of sense.
It's still surprising. It seems like Pokemon Sword outsold Pokemon Shield by a lot. Because Shield's at 20. Pokemon Sword is at 12.
Because it's the cooler title.
I wonder how close, though. Like, I wonder like how close that gap is. Because that is bizarre that it would be that big of a gap. But also, dude, Pokemon
Sword.
They got two fucking spots on this 20 list.
Dude.
That's crazy.
Are there any other standouts to you aside from that?
Ring Fit Adventure, kind of.
Yeah.
But
being
even,
that high,
I've heard
I think.
Such great things about it.
Yeah. And that's the thing is like people dig it a lot. And, you know, when you look at that story, it sounds very doom and gloom, but really it's just kind of the reality of this.
It's where we're at.
It's where we're at. But more than that, just comparing this January and coming out of the holiday season to last, it's apples to oranges. Like, not only were there not many games coming out in January of consequence, there weren't many games coming out in December of consequence that are going to sell systems.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I remember for OKBeast, we did our game of the year in December, right? Where December 2018, it was one of those things where it's like, all right, like, Grease is coming out. We have Smash. We have quite a few games we want to, like, you know, get in and play before game of the year. And this time around, right, in 2019, December was like, oh, no, this is a breeze. There's nothing coming out in December.
There was a couple things in November. You know, we had Star Wars and stuff.
Yeah, Star Wars and stuff. But
that was kind of it. Then games just stopped.
Games stopped, yeah. DH Canada writes in and says, what's up, KFGD crew? So GTA 5 was one of the top 5 selling games of January 2020. Shout out to Kakarot being number 1. Am I crazy for thinking there's a chance GTA gets re-released on next-gen consoles, or does backwards compatibility make that pointless? I mean, why not get some more cash by selling it to people again? Hope y'all have a good Valentine's weekend. This Valentine's Day, I just want Square Enix to whisper 3 little words into my ear. Quote, the Bouncer remake.
I knew
join
it.
The movement. Hashtag remake the Bouncer.
It's kind of like we were saying earlier, though, where it's like we don't, until we see what the box looks like, we don't know like what's going to be pointless and what's going to help companies make money.
What's the remaster of the next gen? Like, what does that look like?
But like also, like, what is, like, how accessible is backwards compatibility? How easy is that? Is that a disc-based thing? Are we packaging Xbox One Series X games the same as Xbox One games? Who knows? So if it's less like that, I wouldn't be surprised if they re-release.
I think
it's patch-based future, baby.
But yeah, I think no matter what, though, I think we will get a new GTA 5. Like, whether or not it's a remaster or, like, whatever it may be, I think, like, I think if we can't do remasters this gen, Rockstar will then do, like, okay, here's finally your single-player DLC packaged in with GTA 5.
No, they'll,
right?
They'll
like a GTA 5 Royal.
They'll never do that.
I think they would do it. And yeah.
You think 7 years later they're going to finally come out with single-player DLC for a game?
If it'll sell boxes, yes.
I don't see.
They're
Rockstar.
Still making multiplayer deal like new. There are new characters, new assets being made for GTA.
Yeah, because
online.
Multiplayer is the pull now. That the single player isn't the pull 7 years later. So
no, but
like,
I think
he has a point that it would be the pull.
It would
though.
Be a pull.
Like
though.
To
like,
to
I
do
would,
that. I, you're, it's not gonna happen.
It's but, not. But I think all of us here would probably buy a new copy of GTA 5 if it had single player DLC in it.
Yeah, that's true. I just think that. I predict that we're not going to see a world where we get those type of remasters next gen. I think it is going to be a bit more seamless, and I think it's going to be very patch-based like it has been with Xbox One X currently, where it's the enhanced for X stuff. Like, and that's the thing there is...
It doesn't make the money, though.
The thing there is, how do they monetize that?
Yeah.
Like, how do they turn that into a new exciting thing? And I feel like if anyone can do it, it is Rockstar. They can find a way to, like... Be like, oh man, like you should do this and get this thing and here's what it costs.
My thing though is that they've already done that for the last 7 years, right? Like it's been 7 years of them patching in new content for GTA Online, continuing to be like one of the best selling games of the generation, right? While being a last generation game. Like I don't think they could just patch in something new and continue to they could 100% continue to write off that, but I think they can make more money by putting something new on the box, right? Mm-hmm. GTA 5 blank something. Yeah. It doesn't have to be like something super substantial. It could be a 5-hour narrative thing, right, on the single player side. It'll still sell. Like, it would give anybody a new reason to buy GTA 5, buy the actual box again. People will do it.
And I agree with that. I think that the narrative stuff is too much of an investment where and mm-hmm. too much of a mindshare investment of we're close enough to GTA 6, I think, that mm-hmm. they wouldn't want to muddy those waters with a single player type DLC package, whereas I can see, I just can't wait to see what these fucking boxes look like.
Yeah,
because yeah, like what type of change would that need to look like? Is it the same disc just in a different box? Because I wouldn't even be surprised if they did that, you know, depending mm-hmm. on how, like, what Xbox games looks like. Like, I believe that we're gonna get a box that is just it just says Xbox on it, and there'll be little fine print at the bottom. This is playable on this console. That's just like, it is what it is. And it right now it's confusing to the consumer. In a couple of years, everyone's going to understand what that means, right? Yeah. And once that happens, I do see them going back and pinpointing certain games like a GTA 5 that they know are going to keep selling and just putting it the same, literal same disc in mm-hmm. a different box that just has different branding.
Yeah.
Like, almost like the greatest, like PlayStation greatest hits and things like that. But it's only weird for us to think about right now because it's crossing generations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My prediction is I think 100% they're going to do some, like, whether it is what you're saying, right, or like a weird remaster, or we've added ray tracing into GTA 5, like, there's going to be a marketing thing, a way they market GTA 5 again on the next gen of consoles. That's my one prediction.
I think the thing we'll get is that it'll be the same disc, like Tim is saying, but then there will be like some sort of update for the next gen consoles that makes it look better with ray tracing or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they don't do like a whole like remaster re-release or whatever. I think we're too close, like you were saying, to GTA 6 for that to be like a huge.
We'll see, man.
Yeah. In addition,
are we for the GTA 6 really though?
I don't know, but I think we're close enough that you wouldn't want to muddy that experience. But I do think that in addition to there being the race to the prices of these consoles, I also think there is a race to the language of these consoles. And whoever can kind of own the messaging and mm-hmm. get and nail it correctly before the other guy of how all this stuff works, I think is going to like really win the mind share of the people when it comes to if you can monetize and sell that whatever the ray tracing enhanced patches are going to be for these games.
Yeah.
And people associate that with your console. That's gonna be a huge factor.
Tim, I'm really excited to see however Rockstar decides to just get all the money mm-hmm. out of our pockets, mm-hmm. just rob us blind. But that's gonna be so far away. If I wanted to know what's coming to mom and grop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Yeah. Out today, we got Best Friends Forever for Switch and PC. And I've actually demoed that game.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's like a dating sim with dogs. Oh! Yeah. It was in a Nintendo Direct? Part of the Kinda Funny?
It was part of the Nintendo Direct, I think, last year. That's very exciting. Alyssa's looking forward to that one.
There you go. Darksiders Genesis is out today for Switch and PS4. Dreams.
There we go, baby.
Yeah, is out for PS4.
Getting fantastic reviews.
Dude, it is. I've been playing it. And let me tell you, man, the packed-in campaign, Arch Dream is what it's called. I played it last night. Oh, man. I'll tell you about it on PSLV XOXO because I don't want to spoil what I think. But I think some things about it. Railway Empire is out today for Switch. Snack World, the Dungeon Crawl Gold,
cool.
is out for Switch. Street Fighter V Champion Edition, PS4, PC. Bleeding Edge Closed Beta 1 is out today for Xbox One, which will be streaming later. Kitty Maestro is out for Switch.
Kitty Maestro.
Railway Empire Nintendo Switch Edition is out for Switch. Reed Remastered for PS4 and Switch. Saboteur 2 Avenging Angel for PS4. Speedway Racing for Switch. The Incredible Adventures of Super Panda is out for Switch. Under Hero, which I'm playing, is out for PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. You'll hear more about that on PSLV XOXO. Warriors Orochi 4 Ultimate is out for PS4, Xbox One, Windows, PC, and Switch. And then the 6th DLC of Wreckfest, the Rusty Rats Car Pack is out today on all platforms. New dates, we have Sonic at the Olympic Games Tokyo 2020 is coming to Android and iOS in May. And has that happened before? Have they had previous Olympic Games? come out for
the iOS?
Like mobile? Mobile? Yeah.
Not that I know of, but
that's the first I've heard of that. And then publisher Merge Games and Berlin-based studio Ion Lands invites you to cruise amongst the clouds. The clouds? The clouds is the clouds in the neon streaked skies of Cloudpunk when it releases later this year.
Cloudpunk.
Now it's time for reader mail. You can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Upstart. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy. Getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully, there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high-interest credit card debt. When Greg moved to SF, he took out a loan, and the rate sucked. Upstart could have helped because Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate. Since it's just a soft pull, it won't affect your credit score. The hard pull happens if you accept your rate. The best part, once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. Over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is top-ranked in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot, and hurry up to upstart.com/kfgames to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. That's upstart.com/kfgames. Next, we're brought to you by Mint Mobile. If you're still using one of the big wireless providers this year, have you asked yourself what you're paying for? Between expensive retail stores, inflated prices, and hidden fees, you're being taken advantage of because they know you'll pay. Enter Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile provides the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. Mint Mobile saves on retail locations and overhead, then passes those savings directly to you. Tim got his mom this plan because she was getting overcharged for stuff she wasn't using. And Tim, how'd that go?
It was true. And not only that, it was so easy for her. She's older woman. You know what I mean? Made us a lot of mistakes when it comes to the cell phones and all this stuff. There was always problems with things just being too complicated. Mm-hmm. This Mint Mobile, sent right to her, super easy.
There you go. Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month.
It's true.
Every plan comes with unlimited nationwide talk and text. With Mint Mobile, stop paying for unlimited data you'll never use. Choose between plans with 3, 8, or 12 gigabytes of 4G LTE data. Use your phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch your old wireless bill and start saving with Mint Mobile. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped directly to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/games. That's mintmobile.com/games. Cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/games. Then lastly, we're brought to you by Spotify's The Besties. Hey listeners, we know you love all things video games, so we want to tell you about a Spotify original podcast called The Besties. Every Friday, the creators of The Adventure Zone, Justin and Griffin McElroy, are joined by their two best friends and hardened video game reporters, Russ Frushtick and Chris Plant, to go deep on a single new video game. If you've been a fan of Polygon, you'll know these guys. They co-founded it. Plus, The Besties cover all the major moments in video games in 2020, from new console launches to Cyberpunk 2077 and beyond. And at the end of the year, they do a complete showdown pitting all the top games of the year against one another to get to the top game of the year. It's pretty epic. But The Besties can't do it without their fans who write in each week with all sorts of goofy suggestions. It's like a book club for video games. I freaking love Griff McElroy and Justin McElroy and Chris Plant and Russ Frushtick. They're all great people. I've listened to their podcasts. They're awesome. They know what they're talking about. You can find The Besties on Spotify, which also has your favorite podcast, including this one, and music all for free. Listen to The Besties for free only on Spotify. The nanobiologist writes in and says, "Hi, Blessing and Tim Klops.
It's me.
Sonic the Hedgehog movie is getting surprisingly good reviews. Are we seeing a turn for video game movies? I mean, it makes sense. Creators who grew up playing Pokemon, Sonic, etc., are now able to direct and produce movies, so they want to do those properties proud. Do you think with the resurgence of video game movies not only doing fairly well ratings-wise, but even with box with opening box office numbers, we will see many more classic games get a chance on the big screen. Thanks, the Nanobiologist.
Well, we know we got the Mario movie, the animated Mario movie, coming next year, I think it is.
Is it? That's oh, yeah, 2021.
2021,
yeah.
Which felt so far away.
It did.
But hey, it's coming up now.
Do you have faith in it?
In the movie?
Yeah, in the Mario movie.
I mean, here's the thing. I have as much faith as I have in these properties, right? Like, I'm interested to see where the actual box office ends up for Sonic. I think it's going to do relatively well. But Detective Pikachu didn't do as well as I thought it was going to. You know, bless you.
Thank you.
Leading into Detective Pikachu, I thought they were hitting all the right notes where it really looked like people gave a shit about this world and about Pokemon and about not just doing Pokemon, but doing Pokemon as a movie, not a video game. And I feel like that's the key thing to translate from one medium to the other. And I think that Detective Pikachu, it was good. I enjoyed it a lot. But it didn't set the world on fire in terms of sales. And that's crazy when you add Ryan Reynolds and the cutest goddamn Pikachu you've ever seen.
Yeah, right at the front.
And you just, I would have expected that to be a massive hit with kids in a way that it just simply wasn't. Will Sonic change that? I don't know.
I don't think so. Like, you know? Compared to Detective Pikachu, don't want to save that. I was going to say Detective Pikachu, my opinions on it compared to Sonic, but I want to save that for Scream Fast.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Sonic has. Sonic definitely actually doesn't have the juice that Pokemon has, right? As a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And this Sonic movie, compared to the Detective Pikachu movie, I don't feel like it's going to have the juice it needs.
Ooh, I don't know. I think that Sonic's going to do better than Detective Pikachu did. I think a lot of it has to do with just timing of like release. But also, like, Pokemon definitely as a franchise, I mean, it's Pokemon.
Yeah.
I don't need to say anything more. Sonic is so recognizable. Like, Gia knew Sonic as a character.
For sure.
Doesn't
yes.
know shit about him.
For
but
sure.
Knew it. And of course, she knew Pikachu as well.
Mm-hmm. That's my thing is, I feel like if you did a test, right, and put Pikachu and Sonic in front of 100 random people, more people will probably be able to recognize Pikachu over Sonic. Granted, more people might be able to name Sonic by name.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, people will be able to name Pikachu by name.
At this point.
Yeah. At this point.
I mean, you know, we're making weird arguments here, but I feel like that's the point, though. Is like that we're talking about some of the most iconic characters in pop culture history, period. Not just video games, right? Sonic is in that level. I think the difference is there might be an oversaturation of Pokemon that it might have felt like just another Pokemon movie. Mm. Whereas like, oh, Sonic the Hedgehog, like that's... I know that from the 90s. Like, that's like, you know, parents know that.
Yeah, it's
shit.
Coming back.
And it's like, here it is, right? And like, it's getting good reviews. And it's like, that it's that type of momentum and juice. Detective Pikachu was surrounded by Aladdin and Lion King and Avengers.
That's true. That's
you
a good
know
point.
What I mean?
Yeah, like, that's a very good point.
Like, that makes it very difficult when you're comparing it directly. Like, right now, Sonic's going up against
nothing really, right? Birds of Prey,
Birds
which
of
is
Prey.
Doing horribly.
So, yeah,
sadly.
It's going to beat Birds of Prey. Yeah. So. What does this mean for the future of video game movies? I don't know if it means much. I think that at this point, I don't know if we're going to get a Detective Pikachu sequel. And that makes me really sad.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing I want more than more of that world. I feel like it was such a good attempt at it. And I don't think it was a great movie, but like, I want more.
You don't think Detective Pikachu was a great movie?
No.
Really?
No. I mean, and I love so much about it, but like, it was serviceable.
I'm
good,
very curious about the Sonic podcast we're about to record.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is, if anything, a sign that the industry is learning more. Because I feel like, you know, it's widely thought and known that video game movies aren't the greatest, right? Or haven't been the greatest, right? There have been a history of bad video game movies. And recently with Detective Pikachu and Sonic, and I didn't watch the Warcraft movie, but I heard decent things about it, right? Like, I feel like more and more people are starting to wise up to what makes a serviceable like adaptation of a franchise.
Here's my thing, though. I think that the notion that video game movies are bad is a very insular thing that we have in our bubble, but that outside people don't care or understand, right? It's not like like people don't look at it and be like, oh man, video game movies, that's going to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like, oh, what's that franchise? Like, it's
really?
I think it's more franchise based.
I feel like I've seen it more so just like video games blanket. Like, as far as like how I've thought about video game adaptations over the last, like, I guess forever.
But that's us. We're in. You know what I mean? I'm talking about the general moviegoer. I'm talking about, like, families that would be going to go see Sonic or Detective Pikachu. Like,
people who love Resident Evil but have never, like, played those games. And stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. There are people that, that like, love those like, goddamn movies and, like, don't like even know they're based on the video games.
Like, I feel like there are certain, like, cult exceptions such as Resident Evil, right? And weren't there, like, wasn't there, like, a good Tomb Raider movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I heard good things about Tomb Raider movies, right?
Which, like, one?
There's one.
Which one?
Or which one? I don't know, man.
The modern one.
Really?
With Alicia Vikander?
Vikander.
Yeah. I mean, it was fine. It wasn't bad.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it wasn't great. Like, I don't think any of these movies have been great, though.
That's fair.
I don't know, man. I feel like the last couple, right, have been better than I would have expected for video game movies.
I don't know, and I guess that's my thing, is I just think that the notion that video game movies are bad is just like, no, dude, it's just like there was a lot of bad movies. Just like saying superhero movies are bad. It's like, yeah, there was a lot of bad superhero movies. A fuck ton of them.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also a lot of good ones at all points.
What would you say are your top three video game movies?
I don't know. I want to give an immediate shout out to Dead or Alive, which, have you seen Dead or Alive?
No, I've not seen it, no.
Horrible, trash movie.
Okay.
But it takes the ideas of that video game and translates it to the movie screen in beautiful, awesome, stupid, corny ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so they get installed with these, like, nanochips, so they see life bars as they fight.
That's perfect.
It's fucking awesome.
That's very
And they
perfect.
Play volleyball on the beach.
But yeah, I feel like we're going to start seeing more and more better adaptations. Like, the Uncharted movie is up in the air. Like, I don't have faith in it yet. Like, once I see a trailer, then we'll be able to, like, make our actual judgments. But so far, I'm not bestowed with hope for it. But, like, the Mario movie, I think at the very least is going to be as good as Detective Pikachu, right? That's my expectation right now. A Quirk of Fate writes in and says, "Morning all. With Half-Life Alyx getting a release date and it only being a few weeks away, is there a growing trend for a shorter date announcement to release periods for bigger games? And do you think this is a good thing? Thinking back to how late we got the release date for the most recent God of War and even the short timescale for Fallout 4, is this going to become the norm?" That sounds like a rap verse. It all rhymed. "Thanks again for reading my rambling questions and taking the time to answer a few of them. Keep that sweet content coming."
I don't know if God of War is a great example, though, because they announced that game years before they dated
it. Yeah, but he's talking about, like, the actual, like, the
date. Yeah, it was, like, November where we learned it was coming in, like, March or whatever.
Yeah, but then, like, it wasn't until, like, the month before, right, where we got... I think it came out in April, and it was, like, the month or two before where we actually got the date.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that it's going to trend towards the release date announcement to the game coming out being a lot shorter, but that's just because things have changed. The world has changed.
I think that's a good thing. I think it's an evolution of people, of companies feeling more comfortable not having that, like, actual, like, stamp and announcing that to their audience, because video games have become such a thing where they're complicated to make. They become more and more complicated to make as technology gets better and grows, right? And so a lot of the time, companies and developers don't know when they're going to actually be able to finish a thing because there's so many moving parts. And so being able to withhold that information and have the freedom to, like, put out that information whenever they want, right? Like, they don't have to, like, be at E3, they don't have to announce their date. They can announce a year or a window, or, like, this is what we're thinking about.
Here's a game.
Yeah, like,
it's happening.
Or here's a game that we are working on, right? They don't have to say those things, right? Because they can announce whatever on a blog, on Twitter, with just an image, right? Having that freedom and having that, like, leniency as far as, like, our expectations, I think is a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. I think it's going to trend that way. I do think it's funny, like, that as an industry, we talk about Fallout 4 as being this shiny example of this, of, like, hey, it was announced and came out, like, within a couple months. It's funny, though, that we're talking about a game that's, what, now 4 years ago? Like, there aren't that many examples of this. I think that Resident Evil 3 is a great example of, hey, game announced, and it's coming out within 4 months of it being announced.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy.
This is an interesting topic too, because I feel like there's two schools of thoughts that are very much married to the way they think of, like, because I know people that were like, why did I know about Final Fantasy VII that early, right? But on the other side, there are people that are like, developers should be super open about what they're working on. We should, you know years before.
Yeah.
Right? And I understand the idea of things don't need to be so secretive, but at the same time, There's marketing and advertising that's built into it, and so you want to be able to have this build with your audience.
Yeah, video games aren't movies, man. We got to treat them differently. They're their own thing. And things that that's not to say that they need to stay how they've always been, even though, you know, all of us are going to be nostalgic about what E3 used to be. Mm-hmm. E3 is not that anymore. Like, the way that games are announced and talked about and release dates and, like, the different beats that they need to hit of their marketing cycle has changed, and it has grown and evolved. And I personally think that we're seeing a trend where, for the better, games are going to be announced and released in shorter windows. Mm-hmm. I hope that we never lose the Death Strandings and Final Fantasy VII remakes that are these golden goose giant. Like, yeah, they're coming. There's something. It's something to be excited about, to wonder, like, are we going to see it at this show? Like, I always want to be asking that question of, like, what update are we going to get for these massive projects, while also getting, hey, here's this game that's coming out that you're going to get to play now.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
It's like, that keeps generations exciting for video games.
I think so, too. And for me, I do have the question of, like, why have I known about Bayonetta 3 for quite a few years, right? And I've heard nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's not necessarily helping me in many ways, right? Like, I can look forward to Bayonetta 3, but at the end of the day, right, without a date, without a year, without much more information on it, it's like, I'm just sitting here with this knowledge in my brain. And, you know, every now and then I just think about Bayonetta 3, and it's like, I'm going to get that game someday.
Yeah.
And that's kind of useless information at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of with I like the school of thought of, yeah, dude, just like announce your game or announce your release and like release it later this year, right? You don't have to like be a million years out. But I do also like the juggernaut thing of like,
and it can't be every game
coming soon.
Like,
yeah,
I feel like there's
game.
Certain games that like get that leniency.
Yeah. And like, it's also painful when things get announced too early and then they get canceled, right? Or like things shift around.
I mean, that's Bayonetta 3, right? It's like they announced that game not expecting it to be this late, I'm sure.
Yeah.
There was issues.
And
things
it's like
happen.
The Last Guardian, right, which eventually came out, but mm-hmm. it was one of those things of like, you know, if they didn't announce it, they probably could have just canceled it and wouldn't have been a big deal, right? It coming out, it's great for me because I actually really liked The Last Guardian, but, you know, Agent from Rockstar, why did we have to know about that, you mm-hmm. know? And so that's kind of where I'm at. Let's see here. Now it's time to squad up. Sid writes in with an Epic Games Store squad up and says, "Hi, I'm Sid. I've been a listener for about 2 years now and have only recently become a patron. I recently purchased The Division 2 after hearing about the $3 sale on KFGD and need some people to play with. My username is SSPlayer on the Epic Games Store, and I'm usually online in the evenings on weekdays and in the afternoon and evenings on weekends. So go squad up with Sid. Once again, SSPlayer on the Epic Game Store. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong.
What we get wrong?
Let's see, because apparently I have to re-log in to get access to this Uh-oh. Google Sheet.
Let me see if I can swoop in and help you.
All right,
here.
Looks like I am in, and cool. You're wrong is loading, and I'm going to see it in a second, and I got to scroll down to see what we got
there
wrong.
We
there we go. People had some things to say. The nail biologist writes in and says, the quote is, "I'm starting to think smartphones are actually making us less connected." Thank you.
There we go.
Nail biologist. Okay. That's actually one I did want clarification on. Let's see here. Lord of Pwn writes in and says, "Mike Drucker was credited as the writer for last night's Dice
awesome.
Awards." Thank you.
The Druck.
Nail biologist writes in with a definition of an adventure game that I'm going to skip through because I don't think there's a factual thing with the definition of adventure game because, like, there's not really an Avengers of video game genres,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, it is kind of however you want to define it, but at the same time, I'd just like for more of a organized defining of things. Let's see here. A lot of editorializing. Let's see, breaking news that we'll get to on a different day. All right. Yeah. It's a whole lot of editorializing. So I think we're good. Oh, the new Super Mario this is from VG. New Super Mario movie is 2022, not 2021. Have a nice weekend. Dang, that's so far away.
If I wanted to know what was coming to Pomegranate, I'm looking into something here.
Yeah, you're looking into some breaking news.
Yeah, nanobiologist sent some breaking news from Destructoid. The first ever Sonic Station live broadcast, which is kind of like a Nintendo Direct for Sonic, debuts next week.
Nice.
Cool. The publishers announced a new initiative called Sonic Station Live, which can only be described as yet another Nintendo Direct-like effort. The first episode will debut February 20th.
I think this is related to what we talked about last month, where every month there's going to be new news for Sonic. So,
what a time to be alive.
Dude, what a great year. The year of Sonic.
The year
of Sonic.
The most cursed year.
Oh my God.
What would you do for a Mania 2?
Oh, you don't want to know on this show. Yeah, I'll tell you off camera. I mean, I would love a Generations 2, honestly.
I think it's too early for that.
I feel like Sonic Forces was supposed to be that, but it just wasn't good.
It wasn't, man. It really wasn't. Mania was great. I want a Mania 2.
Of course, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindafunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.
Yeah, bitches.